When it comes to the Jackie Chan special, I've got one or two ideas out there, but
But what did you have any suggestion in terms of what moves we should discuss or?
no, but well, obviously we could do it in the way where maybe picking two significant films from, I was gonna say each decade, but the cunt did make a lot of films.
Well, it's basically the 70s and 80s and a little bit of the 90s, I think we're going to cover, because I don't have any interest in talking about his Hollywood career because it's been talked to death, and I'm more interested in highlighting the greatness of him. And we all know he's on a downslide, but we all eventually become old and we don't make as good movies as we did 20, 30 years ago. But yeah, it's just going to be not mean-spirited. So The Spy Next Door won't be one of the movies we'll discuss in detail, because I have no desire to watch the film.
But will we actually go up into basically what they cry the noughties, where we could cover films like The Myth and what's it cried, Robin B. Hood.
Yeah, why not? I've not seen either of those, so.
Because I think at most we could probably get 5 episodes on them. See,
Wow.
see, I was thinking in the way of maybe we covered 2 films from each
Yeah.
decade. One part of me would like to think, obviously we're back on air now. One part of me would like to think that maybe we would choose one of his significant films from that decade, and then maybe one of his underlooked films of that decade.
Yeah. I was thinking like moves like New Fist of Fury, not because it's overlooked or underrated, but because it's such a ill fit for Jackie Chan. It's basically Law Wei, the director, trying to make a new Bruce Lee, and reportedly, because I haven't seen it, it just doesn't work. And that stuff is kind of fascinating to me to
Funnily
track.
enough, I've seen it. It put me to sleep.
Okay, but yeah,
But
no movies are fixed. No, it's not decided, but it's an idea. Tell us what if you have any ideas. I'd be willing to listen to. Obviously, we have a topic on the forum about the specials, and so it's going to be fun. So as you hear, we have a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, despite the show. The show schedule and the show production might be slightly less during 2010. We're working hard.
But not to worry, during those quiet gaps, I will be basically reintroducing more shows of the Ikin Cheng series, where I will be doing a 6-part series covering the Young and Dangerous movies, then following it up with Andrew Lau's Storm Riders trilogy, and of course, exceptions of the new movies. So that will be at least a dozen episodes to fill the gaps.
Absolutely, I'm so on for that. I'm so fucking on for that.
Special guest? None, just me.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. I'll stay out of it then. As a final aside, this very funny movie. It's available on DVD on the label Y2K in Hong Kong. A print from the Laserdisc or the cinema print, so it's not a remastered one. It's missing a little bit of a scene early in the film where Hoi describes how to properly eat a duck. Because it takes emotional investment. This scene was actually on the prior releases on VCD and Laserdisc, but for some reason it's out of the movie. And the other movies from this time that Hoi produced himself under his production company, aside from the drama comedy Always on My Mind, it's not the best sources out there, source material found for these movies. So The Magic Touch and Mr. Coconut on DVD are not the most best-looking movies either, but it's not going to change anytime soon, so go out and get them. And Always on My Mind is a great drama comedy about it's very Michael Hoy, but it's spiced up with this terminal illness plot, and it's a very very touching film as well. To be honest, I think the Y2K DVD is going out of print now, so it's kind of hard to watch this movie right now. But if you ever got a chance, ever get a chance, Chicken and Duck Talk is good fun. How's your Michael Hoi brothers experience so far? Have you seen like the old timey ones, Private Eyes and stuff?
No, I think the only time I'm really, well, seeing a lot of the Hoi brothers is via the Lucky Stars, not like the Aces Go Places. I've got the Aces Go Places box set.
Yeah, with Sam Hoy, yeah.
from, but yep, my experience with them has not been any further than that.
Yeah, as Mr.
Mainly
Vampire,
because,
but
of course, yes, but
it's not a Hoi Brothers movie or something.
The only thing is, well, a lot of the films, well, just like the box set, have been remastered once. So, and of course, they're not always the cheapest. I had received the Lucky Stars box set as a gift, so I was fine in that aspect, but...
The Aces Go Places box set, you mean?
Did I say Lucky Stars Go Places?
Yes, yes. No, yes. I said Lucky Stars.
I had gotten that one first, so that was the time where I was more on a hunt for the Lucky Stars movies.
But, by the way, going slightly back to Clifton Cove, a director, not a particular good director as such, but another director that you can say, oh, he made those kind of movies, he had that kind of style. That never really happened until he made, like in the 90s, a bunch of stage play adaptations, of movie adaptations of stage plays. The likes of I Have a Date with Spring, which is a very popular movie, and not too bad either. The Umbrella Story that I hunted for a long time and finally got, was not the best movie. The Mad Phoenix as well. And I Will Wait for You, I think, was a stage play as well. It's a very small movie too. Anita Yun and Tony Lungafai. Tony Lungafai with a turkey on his head, which is a good enough reason to watch that. It's harmless. But yeah, that's kind of the style he found eventually, Clifton Cole. But he's been a mainstay in the industry for a long time. He has a cameo on this film, Chicken and Duck Talk, as well as producer Ronnie Yu appears in a cameo. He just puts his head out of a pothole in the street. Is that what you call it? The holes leading out of the sewers.
So other than that, today I'd recorded the movie a fortnight ago, but I'd watched Kill Bill Volume 1, and that was in the beautiful, beautiful HD. So everyone looked really clean. Of course, as soon as the first fight happened, off everyone looked horribly sweaty and blood soaked.
Like the classic Hong Kong cinema thing where, during the second angle of a fight scene, you see
blood patches moved.
But also the sweat on people's backs.
Ah, yes.
In Hong Kong movies, when they fight outdoors, they're just soaked already. But they always have the bright idea of doing fights outside and in the middle of the summer in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. So, yeah.
But yeah, that was a fun film. A lot of the movie I've forgotten about. So there, of course, there was surprise in some of the scenes again. But
yeah,
that was a good throwaway movie. I actually quite like the scenes with Sonny Chiba when he's first introduced in the movie, and he's having the argument with his assistant when it comes to serving tea. He's like, "Come on, man, I'm watching my soap operas. Like, forget your soap operas. Get down here." But it's all in Japanese, and Uma Thurman's just standing there looking a bit dumb.
It's good fun. It's also a movie filled to the brim with stuff. So no wonder you notice stuff on a third or fourth viewing.
I don't dare look at the trivia page for this movie because I expect my monitor to break out and a fucking paper scroll come rolling across the living room with fucking trivia notes.
Reference.
Yeah.
I think, speaking again of Kill Bill, I think when we spoke of pink movies on the Japan on Fire, I think I referenced the fact that it was the song from Female Prisoner used in Kill Bill, but it's actually I think the Lady Snowblood song that's used in Kill Bill. It's also on the soundtrack,
right.
And but then again, I might have said it correct at that time as well. But, that's still a fun connection to Lady Snowblood, which I saw fairly recently for the first time. And that is an awesome film. Wonderfully gory. That kind of, fountain of blood a la Japan.
Yes,
the
Garden
so well. Fucking hell, that movie rocked.
Margaret was asking me, why is this so bloody? It's like, it's because it's supposed to be Japanese.
It's Japanese, of course. Oh.
Aye, that's why it's like a fucking fire hydrant's been knocked over.
Yeah, I love that film, so no wonder it got referenced in Kill Bill and in other stuff since then.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
By
the way, I want to ask you this. With distance to Dragon Ball Evolution, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, would you like to watch it once the dust settles, or you don't want to unearth that film in any way?
I think if it's to the point where I'm flicking through the channels and it's on, and see how many minutes I could actually bear. Because I think the first time I'll actually grim, not just grimace, is it right? Yeah. That's it, turn over.
Yeah.
But No. Rather than that, I want to see a 10th happiness.
Yeah, that's right. Good. That's a good reference. The 8th happiness is a wonderful Chow Yun-fat.
Mm-hmm. My Margaret, as you can, loves her Chow Yun-fat films. And I had bought all of her secondhand ones, and that was one of them. And she just like, nah, I can't see Chow Yun-fat be like acting gay. Well, being camp. I was like, that's not Chow Yun-fat. I want the guy with the slick hair and the guns. So, but look, he's wearing a polo neck.
Oh, you should watch Diary of a Big Man then, where Chow Yun-fat has his famous very nice song number.
Oh, wait, no, I remember that one. I think we have it.
That's wonderful. Based on what she doesn't want to see, don't fucking show a Diary of a Big Man. It's a wonderful movie, and a very nice song number is totally camp and wonderful. Mm-hmm. Very nice!
Yeah, I think that the trailers go out as well.
Yeah.
I think I haven't really seen the trailer, but I remember that. Very nice.
He made a few albums, I think. More in comedy vein, though, rather than, you know, a moody, melancholy cantopop singer. I don't think Chow Yun-fat wanted that. He wanted to be goofy. Just like Anthony Wong wanted to make a hip-hop album or a rap album. Which he did, apparently. Yeah, foul-mouthed album.
The latest tracks from A. Wong.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be cool. That'll be corny back then and obviously now.
Yes. Going to show you this picture here. It's actually... Well, I'm going to make this a deleted conversation.
Okay.
Recently, as you know, as some people know, I'm doing all this volunteering work to open up an old cinema.
Mm.
And I was at my work the other day, I was going through the old microfilms where we have newspapers going back to 1897. And I was going through a newspaper, our local newspaper, in 1982. Actually, I was looking for, looking for the deaths in the newspapers, trying to find a relative of mine. Uh-huh. And I noticed the page before it always had movie listings of that week. And our local cinema used to show the fucking weirdest films. It basically just shown porn, like, at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Cool.
And before that, it would be like a Mad Max double bill.
Ooh, lovely.
And it was just, okay, that's a bit weird, but this one week it had shown just a mixture of porn and martial arts. And I was like, right, I need to capture this moment.
They mix. Porn and martial arts mix. Mm-hmm.
So I have now sent you the image, which I will post on our forum. If you could happily read out the list of movies they're showing that week.
Oh, I will. Cocks and Balls, part 2.
I mean, this is our local newspaper. This is the films that are advertising in it.
So, let's see here. Here we go. All right. The movie is playing at... Apparently, this was the Troxy Cinema. Is that the cinema? Is that the...
This was city? The other cinema, yes. The one, right. I'm restoring is was closed by that time.
Right, oh. Oh boy, I would have loved to be at the cinema that week in 1982. All right, today, love, passion, and pleasure. The movie is Erotic Exploits of a Sexy Seducer. And the movie following that is Naked Exorcism. Cool. So, the day after, or later on in the program, Big Boss 2. And followed by Give Us Our Daily Sex. Please give us. Mm-hmm. On Monday, February 8th, apparently they showed Enter the Ninja, mm-hmm. which is a fairly famous film, actually. Followed by Nightwing, which doesn't sound at all.
And underneath it does mention adults only.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, how lovely.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it great looking for old newspapers?
And you didn't have to sit through the fucking boring porn either. The Asian movies, at least, you know, in the Big Boss 2 and Enter the Ninja examples, mm-hmm. they showed first. Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh my god. Erotic Exploits of a Sexy Seducer.
Mm-hmm. But come on, just give us our daily sex.
Yeah, for fuck's sake, too. 6:45 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's just like after you finish your tea, I think I'll go see a dirty movie.
Put your coat on and your hat. Stroll down to the cinema.
I fucking
cinema.
Pull the coat up right high so it covers your face as you're handing over the money.
Come on, people are just coming out with dirty hands afterwards.
I say, oh, that kung fu film was good. That film finished hours ago. Did it? Oh, right. I'll be seeing you. Cheerio. Yes,
top of the morning to you. Wow.
But man, it's like, obviously, I think when the cinema reopens here, I don't think we'll be showing those movies.
Ah, for fuck's sake, seek out the erotic exploits of a sexy seducer. It's bound to be out there. Probably public domain, so you can't get it. And there's something to be said for directorial skill when you put together movies like The Miracle Fighters.
Yes.
Because that's not akin to let's go out and shoot something. And it's not all due to action directing skills. It takes a lot to convey that nuttiness from Miracle Fighters. Can't really quote one single thing now. All I can conjure up in my mind is, say, during the finale, this obstacle course involves some sort of a reanimated stick figure of some sort.
Yeah.
That has a penis, essentially. I seem to remember that. But
I remember the trailer.
Yeah. Was that enough for you, or did you actually watch the film?
I've never seen the film. Okay. But, yeah, the trailer was on one of the DVDs I had.
Well, you're in for something then of that Jung clan nuttiness that they provided for a few movies, that the Taoism Drunk God, Shaolin Drunk God, and the Miracle Fighters. I guess mismatched couples can be, you know, put into that crowd, but it's not because it has that energy. But you know what? I wholeheartedly recommend checking out. If you can find Miracle Fighters, I'm not sure you can find that anymore, but the Taoism Drunk God is supposed to be nutty. So that's my recommendation. Being older is necessarily not a bad thing either.
Yeah.
It's always been my fear. Some actors need to grow old before they can make an impact. And you can either connect that, to be honest, to Ekin Cheng. Mm-hmm. I thought he started to... He's doing his best work nowadays, and you know, let's say for five or six years now, he's been doing really well. Thanks to, you know, he's allowed himself to grow fat for a few movies or yes. One movie, things for rule number one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, go for it, dude.
And I'm pretty sure it got edited down into like a movie.
Oh my god!
Like it was basically one of those Tai Seng jobs, where they would release it as a film, like a 2-hour film.
40 hours of television into 2 hours? Fuck that.
Yeah.
But nowadays, that opportunity to release full-length series has increased, especially Tai Seng has done... again, I think they did the Seven Swords TV series.
Mm-hmm.
It's done... And in Hong Kong, this is happening as well with, you know, I think it's Legend of the Condor Heroes or Return of the Condor Heroes. It's a classic series, and hopefully the modern series, Police Cadet series, that brought a lot of... brought out a lot of big movie stars that became movie stars. They appeared in that. So there's a chance to hopefully see the Storm Riders TV series uncut, because editing down that shit to 2 hours, no.
I don't want that job.
No. Yeah, they had that. They did that with the Fist of Fury Donnie Yen TV series,
yeah.
Which resulted in 2 volumes. One that was total fucking shit. The Fist of Fury one. Was just action, 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 action. A character. Oh, look, Lolita. Action, 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 action. You know, what is this about? But then you had Sworn Revenge, which kept a large part of the storytelling from Fist of Fury TV series. And that proved that was probably a pretty solid TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Coe as the master of... what the hell? What was Fearless Chinese title? And what was that master's name now again? Oh, I've forgotten about that. Cut. Anyway, very cool. And I guess Stu, being our resident wrestling expert, or at least wrestling fan, he now that he knows there are wrestlers in the movie, former and current, if you will, he's going to be lining up outside the cinema whenever he comes to Scotland.
I mean, the wrestling guys were great. Sylvester Turkey, who's also known as the Bear, and Predator. I mean, he's a WWE guy. He was also K1 and 01 champion. If you do a YouTube search, you can see him in a couple of fights, including fighting one huge Korean guy. I mean, and Sylvester's 6'10", and this Korean guy's about 7'6". Sylvester's also in a movie that I'm sure Kenneth needs to check out called Oh My Zombie Mermaid, a.k.a. I Are My House Collapses, formerly House of Smackdown, which is basically, imagine Robotrix meets WWE wrestling, and was action directed and co-directed by Donnie Yen protege Kenji Tanigaki.
Wow.
Sylvester is incredible. Fantastic skills, incredibly great attitude, great sense of fun. John Heidenreich, completely and utterly insane in the best possible way. His character in WWE was an insane Aryan bad guy, and John is an incredibly nice, insane, great guy. He's a fantastic guy, great skills as well. Matt Weiss, very good, makes a great bad guy. Dominic Vandenberg, incredible martial artist, incredible man. If you get a chance, there's a book called The Iron Circle, which chronicles some of his life. Phenomenal and just incredible guy. And Conan Stevens from Somtam and Chandy Chok to China also turns up as one of the wrestlers and gets to beat up some little kids, just like the mean man he is.
It sounds like old-timey Hong Kong cinema where kids could beat up and get shot in movies left and right.
Well, all I will say is, forget about the kid. The Chinaman's the prize. It's a very important line of dialogue at one point. You know, there's too much... It's like with the Kung Fu Kid, Karate Kid thing. Before a frame of film had been seen, everyone was attacking it. Let's see the film first. Yeah, it's and the funny thing is, half the people attacking it, if you'd said to them 2 months previously that the Karate Kid was a classic movie, they'd have slagged it off.
Hmm.
But as soon as a remake was announced, suddenly it became the untouchable. How can you remake this classic slice of Americana? So.
And when the trailer hit the internet, people were kind of, not too bad.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you've got the kid who's been training with a Wu Gong from Jackie Chan's stunt team for 6 months, and he's at that age where he's young, he's got flexibility. With Jackie choreographing, he ain't going to look bad. And it's just, I think that's the thing that people forget. It's like when people complain about, this movie is being marketed as from the action director of The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
People forget that, yes, we all know who Yuen Wo Ping is, but to Joe Public, who is Yuen Wo Ping?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, he's the guy who did The Matrix. Oh, yeah, I like the action in The Matrix.
Yeah, of course.
I'll check this movie out. It is a bit of a catch-22. I mean, it's frustrating sometimes, but it's how to market. Sometimes you've got to look at it from a marketing point of view.
And that's a point I don't really need to care for as a proper fan of movies, because I know that, what you just said, and I just need to concentrate on the movie eventually. It's
exactly.
Like I don't bother about any stupid crap on the covers or retitling. Just hopefully they'll leave the movie alone in that regard, because all I care about that is about that. And in regards to Forbidden Kingdom, it kind of eventually turned out pretty decent for that movie in terms of the box office. I mean, they got a great poster with the intersecting Jackie Chan, Jet Li thing on the poster where the name intersected. I mean, it could work as an introduction. I'm very happy if it introduces a few people to the likes of the Bride with White Hair.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people forget, I'm honest about it. I used to hate Hong Kong movies because my friends, when I was young, would watch absolutely anything. So I saw a lot of really bad Kung Fu movies and just thought, these are all terrible.
Hmm.
And then one day I sat down and my friend... We watched a double bill of, strangely enough, of Yuen Wo Ping directing Jackie Chan in Snake and Eagle Shadow and Drunken Master back to back. And that, after that, I was like, bang, okay, now I like the movies. Now I really want to dive into this thing. And it's the same thing. It's too many fans, I find, and I'm sure I'll get slated for saying this, is a lot of people seem to have this, they forget what first introduced them to the market. to the genre. It's like in America, there were a lot of fans whose first introduction to Hong Kong cinema was Police Story 3 Supercop.
Yeah.
And to me, it's a good movie, but it's not the greatest movie of all time. But to a lot of people I know in America, that was the first Hong Kong movie they saw.
Mm.
Courtesy of Rim Films, which was an offshoot of Golden Harvest, even though they said they weren't. And, yeah, but I know people in America who were like, no, mate, you know, Supercop is the greatest movie of all time.
It's one of their probably three movies I choose to show people where, if they know of Jackie Chan, you know, I got to show you this. This is insane. It's probably that, Police Story 1, and Drunken Master 2 out of all things, you know, because it
is. Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. To me, it's whatever gets you through the door.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I remember going to see A Better Tomorrow, and the poster we saw in England was a terrible one with Jiayin Fat, Leslie Jung, T. Lung, and Emily Chu all smiling at the camera.
Oh.
You know? And I was like, okay, it's a double bill with an Andy Lau action movie. Okay, I'll go and see. Andy Lau action movie was okay. Can't remember which one it was, but Better Tomorrow blew us all away.
Yeah.
But we were like, what terrible marketing. And it's just that same thing that, you know, sometimes, you know, whatever gets you through the door. I mean, yes, there is annoying retitling, you know, like when you rename The Banquet, The Curse of the Black Scorpion, whatever, you know, or trying to sell a certain movie a certain way. Like, do you know a movie, Pom Pom and Hot Hot?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a good little action comedy.
Yeah.
The problem I think a lot of people have is they bought it under the Eastern Heroes name of Hard-Boiled Killers.
Yep.
Which was trying to say it was this deadly serious action movie.
Not with a lot of mahjong playing.
Yeah, and of course, if you go to see that thinking it's a deadly serious action movie, you've got like 45 minutes to an hour of insane Muay Thai comedy and lots of mahjong before anything really kicks off.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that same thing. It's just getting people to watch the movie. So, yeah, it's like we said, it's a catch-22. You know, who knows how many people went back and watched Mismatched Couples after hearing you guys' commentary. You know.
Yeah.
I know I did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just... And it's that same thing that certain movies, you know, Eastern Condors, for instance, Eastern Condors in Hong Kong is barely known. Story of Ricky in Hong Kong was known as the movie that killed Fan Siu Wong's career.
Mm.
You know, but when you tell people, no, internationally, it's a cult classic. Even Fan Siu Wong couldn't really comprehend that people would like this movie overseas.
Mm.
I mean, when I did the interview with him for Hong Kong Legends, you know, he was, you know, very honest about how much he hated the movie. You know, because he was like, this is a movie that was just terrible. You know, it destroyed my career. It, you know, what was meant to happen didn't happen.
Mm.
You know, and I think it's that same thing. But, you know, when it came out on DVD, it outsold The Killer in England.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, I mean, it's like we said, it's just sometimes it's getting people through the door. It's introducing people, you know, to a movie. You know, like, same with Rush Hour. If you're a diehard Jackie Chan fan for years, Rush Hour's a disappointment. If you'd never seen a Jackie Chan movie before, Rush Hour was a great introduction to him.
Sure. At least the first one.
Yeah,
for me, personally.
Not exactly. Rush Hour 3 originally was going to be a lot better.
Well, even though I didn't have any plans on watching that, I only recently found out, because I don't follow stuff that closely, that Max von Sydow was in that movie, and that's automatically cool.
You know. Oh, no, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes it's moments like that. It's like, I love American martial arts movies, sometimes for the wrong reasons. and there's one movie, Jaguar Lives, with Joe Louis. And finally, a couple of months ago, I picked up, a friend of mine sent me the Laserdisc of it.
Hmm.
And suddenly I realized, there's Yuen Wah. He's in the movie, and they have a chase scene where Joe Louis follows him through Hong Kong, and I'm thinking, man, this must be a cut scene. I've never seen this fight scene. And he chases Yuen Wah onto a boat, and nothing happens. And then I called Yuen Wah and was like, hey, Yuen Wah, you're in another movie. You know, and it's that same thing that, you know, I know people who went to see Australia because they heard Yuen Wah was in it.
Mm.
You know, not as many people as probably Baz Luhrmann hoped, but I know people went to see it. Some people I know went to it because they were like, okay, I want to see Yuen Wah in an American movie. And unfortunately, a lot of his stuff got cut, and one day a director's cut will come out. They'll probably be about 12 hours long because they shot so much stuff. But it was that same thing. It's, you know, it's getting people to see the movie. Sometimes, you know, it's the marketing. I mean, you know, I think we've discussed it before, you know, on Facebook and things, that sometimes that's the thing, that, you know, what appeals to one person might not appeal to someone else. Like, you know, you and me both like, you know, Thomas Tang and Godfrey Ho and Joseph Lai movies. Sometimes for the maddest reasons. But I know a million people who watched Kickboxer King because they saw a cool cover for it. And I think that's the thing. It's like we said, it's the marketing and just, this doesn't really have anything to do with True Legend, but it's the marketing and getting it out. I mean, King of Beggars trod a similar path in some ways, explaining the origin of this character. But, Gordon Chan and Stephen Chow were taking it a bit less seriously. So,
It certainly was a more of a Stephen Chow movie, early 90s insane new wave Wucha, more than anything else. Because, to be honest, it's been a long time since I watched that movie, but I don't have any lasting memories of it being a Soha Ji movie. You know what I mean?
Not exactly. I mean, I just remember because it was like, I think it was like when it came out, it was like the 14th Stephen Chow movie that year.
Yeah.
It was one of those years when I first came to Hong Kong, when I think Stephen Chow had a movie out every 3 weeks. And it was, and the funny thing was, pretty much all of them were really good.
Yeah, exactly. It's that wonderful 91, 92 period.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, that's when I first came to Hong Kong. I mean, everything got a cinema release. And the funny thing is, sometimes, it'd be American movies, movies like, that you'd never think would get a cinema release, did. And it was fantastic because I could go to the cinema every day and see a different movie. And then the funny thing is, like, a prime example is like Infernal Affairs. I like Infernal Affairs, but I don't think it's the greatest movie of all time. And I think that if it had come out in 1991, 92, it would have played for a week or two and just been counted as a good Hong Kong movie.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, because Hong Kong cinema had taken a stumble for several years, not to knock Andrew out, when Infernal Affairs came out, it reminded people of just how good Hong Kong movies could be.
Yeah. It was a good timing in many ways for that movie to emerge.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, I still liked it the first time I saw it when it was called To Live and Die in Chim Sha Choi. And I still think that's a much better movie, actually.
It's definitely probably my favorite Andrew Lau movie, To Live and Die in Chim Sha Choi. But not many people had a chance to watch that movie because it was only, it was never on DVD in Hong Kong and only on tape in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, I actually got Andrew Lau to sign my Laserdisc of it, and he was asking me why I had it.
It's a great poster for that. Isn't it Jackie Chung with a mask of some sort?
Yeah. It's like I said, that's the thing. I mean, that was a movie that I was like, what a great movie.
Yeah.
And it fell through the gap. Yeah, it's one of those ones that, maybe in 25 years' time, someone will suddenly be going, oh my God, this was the lost classic, But to me, exactly, it's like, if you look at Michael Mann when he did Heat, several years earlier, he'd done a movie called L.A. Takedown, a TV movie. And it's pretty much, it's Heat on a TV movie budget. Yeah. And it's the same thing that, To Live and Die in Chim Sha Choi is like Snake in the Eagle's Shadow to Infernal Affairs being Drunken Master. Okay, we've got a better cast, we're going to streamline it, we're going to change certain elements.
It's that kind of, if you have pop star, stardom and fandom, then you don't have too much leverage in terms of, making exactly what you want, because you got to sell posters and records and buttons and CDs and VCDs and things like that. So
and also sometimes it's because it's sponsorship deals. Like do you know the actress Athena Chu? Chu Yan.
Oh yes, I know.
She's under contract to some slimming company, and part of her contract is she cannot get pregnant. If she was to become pregnant, it would be in breach of contract.
Ouch.
And that's the problem. Sometimes people out here, they sign contracts, and then they can't take sometimes the controversial roles because they're worried it could affect that. And Hong Kong and China especially, there are times where, you know, it sounds strange, but Victorian values do come into play. I mean, Gillian Chung, prime example. You know, after the sex scandal, you know, Gillian was the victim, but she's barely been able to work in 2 years. And I mean, she's, you know, it's been frustrating because nobody seems to want to give her a chance to play a different kind of character. You know, everyone was like, well, she always played the virginal queen. How can she play this character now?
Well, didn't anyone see Beyond Arcane in Hong Kong? Well, I guess no one did.
Sadly not, it seems, because exactly. Because when we were making the movie, we were also casting for The Warrior and the Wolf. And, you know, we brought up Gillian's name and everyone acted like, you know, I just suggested we bring in Tracy Lords or something to play a character.
No.
It's, you know, it's one of those things of, you know, the market in Asia sometimes can be very, you know, this is Kenneth, he plays the clean-cut hero. And that's all he's going to play. You know, it's very hard sometimes here to get people to take the edgier roles, you know, because companies here also worry that we've hired Andy Lau, for instance. Why are we going to cover him in a fat suit or in makeup that he's not recognizable? You know, we're paying for Andy Lau, the good-looking guy. That's what the audience wants to see. So sometimes it can be frustrating here that, you know, people are reluctant to change their image. And it's sometimes very annoying because you're sitting there going, you know, like, come on, you know, like Bodyguards and Assassins. Nicholas Jay shaved his head. Donnie Yen didn't because Donnie Yen has a contract with Head and Shoulders. Donnie couldn't really shave his head because of the commercial. So Donnie had to suffer through a lot more makeup issues because they would have to put a bald cap on him every day, constantly be readjusting it. And it was actually very uncomfortable for Donnie because, you know, you're wearing a ball cap and you're doing physical action, that's sweat and everything is staying around in there. But it's one of the things where Donnie's contract made it very awkward if he was to cut his hair. And it's, so is it, sometimes it's just a very awkward situation. I mean, you know, it's that weird, it's a very weird situation of just like how, you know, like in the West, sometimes a scandal can make someone. Like, you know, look at Robert Downey Jr., look at Paris Hilton, look at various people who've overcome all these scandals. In Asia, it's very hard to come back from something like that. And it's just very strange. I mean, Yuen Woo-ping speaks very highly of, you know, Gillian's martial arts skills. He always said she had the ability to really deliver as an action actress. Will she ever get that chance again? It's, as I said, it's a very frustrating thing.
Quite looking forward to this. Fire of Conscience, as a comparison, that trailer looks really good. And seeing Leon Lai, an older Leon Lai in movies nowadays, is something I'm curious about, because he's an actor that's gone from very non-presence to a lot of presence. I think Leon was a very, very dull presence in, like, 90s cinema. Most movies he did was like that. Exceptions being, like, Comrades, Almost a Love Story.
City Hunter.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad in that, but you know,
the Card Slinger.
Yeah, but I'd rather have Giant Fat in that role or Stephen Chow. I mean,
aye.
Just because Wong Jing put you in a movie, that doesn't mean you're exactly as good as Giant Fat, or Andy Lau, or Stephen Chow. but the Leon Lai breakthrough performance, of course, is in Free Going Home. That short short movie within Free is really good in that. So Fire of Conscience and Stool Pigeon, lots to expect from Dante Lam. Little Ip Man, like the kids, Ip Man as a kid. It would be very cute. No, four children, like.
It would only make sense if Donnie Yen dubs over the child.
Yes.
Beats not takes their tuck money.
Well, he did try to play, maybe successfully, because you have seen Dragon Tiger Gate and I have not. He did try to play like a 20-year-old when he was in his 40s. So, you know what? Try to play a kid as well.
His age is never determined in that film. It's never mentioned.
Okay.
I could try and defend it, but he's like, the man does look like he owns a pair of straighteners in that film.
Well, to play a kid, by the way, you just have to walk on your knees. You're all free. Hello, I'm Danny Yen, I'm a kid.
I think that is one of the more amusing things about Dragon Tiger Gate, when they do flashbacks in the film. It goes back to child versions of themselves and they're still wearing identical clothes. Like, when it goes back to reason, they're still wearing the same shirts and It's just like, it's their costume.
I got the moment in my head from Enter the Fat Dragon, you know, that flashback with Peter Young, where he flashbacks to when he falls in love with this girl, and it's, you know,
in the Hawaiian shirt. And...
Yeah, he's still him. He's still Peter. So, yeah, you never know. You never know what Donnie might end up doing.
Because that's all I've been watching.
Yeah.
It's either that or I'll go into detail of the Rush Hour trilogy me and Margaret went through.
what do you think of Rush Hour 3?
Ah, it's alright. There's scenes where I look to Margaret and say, I looked down and said, this is why people hate this film.
And is it Chris Tucker's fault altogether?
It's scenes that just are a bit, really? When there's the main lassie's doing her dance, that Chris Tucker goes and starts... Spotlight goes him, he starts singing, the music picks up perfectly, and it's like, okay, that's a little bit over, but it's alright. Then Jackie Chan comes on a swing down from the ceiling with a spotlight and him singing perfectly, and it's like, these are two cops coming into a scene, this is not how it works.
Oh, well, by the way, how was Max von Sydow, if you remembered him, our great Swedish elder actor? I think he plays a bad guy. Do you remember him from the film at all?
I was in the process of cooking dinner and kind of nipping back and forth.
Right, okay. Maybe it's not in it too much, but I love Max von Sydow, and he also does these really bad films sometimes. But he has a great voice. That he's in Conan as well, and he has the wonderful dialogue where there comes a time when gold loses its luster. Mm-hmm. That's a great voice, you know. You have James Earl Jones and Max von Sydow in one movie, you know, just add Morgan Freeman and Michael Wong to a great roster of voices.
Don't have Michael Wong.
He can do his big Yoda speech from one of the Option movies. He does like a Yoda Star Wars-esque speech in one of the first Option or whatever the movie was called that he made, Michael, in English, of course. He got nominated for one of those movies. That's crazy.
Oh, you've done enough of them, so... One of the things I did actually like out of Rush Hour 3 was the French taxi driver who wishes to become American.
Mm-hmm.
Just his character is actually quite amusing in it.
Is that Roman Polanski by any chance?
No, he was some police chief in France.
Right.
Yep, I remembered him for other reasons.
Yeah, but many do.
This guy would just like, I think basically when the first car chase, shootout, when all this stuff happens, he was their taxi driver, and he was kind of like shitting himself, but now he's got like a thirst for the adrenaline he had that day.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I want to be your full-time driver. He's like, I swear, he's like, I'm American. He's like, let me become American. He's like, I could drink this shit all day. And he's holding like a Starbucks cup. And there's, come on, please, just let me kill a man. They're like, whoa, chill it. I think he's a notable French actor, but like he done surprisingly well in this film.
And Henry Sinatra is in the film too. How's he?
Exactly. Now known for his role in Lost.
Apparently, I haven't seen Lost, so
he has actually got a big part in this final season.
Right.
So yeah, he's getting well known.
And
that traces back to Ninja and the Dragon's Den.
Yeah. I'll probably watch Rush Hour 3, but I want to watch it out of all things for the actors we spoke of on the commentary, Zhang Yingchu, the girl from Protégé, because I think she's so good and she's beautiful. So I'd forgotten she was in that mainland movie Peacock that won so many awards a few years ago. So I think I'm gonna watch that because that was before Protégé. So, but yeah,
I'm sure she was kicking about in Seven Swords as well.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's another one of those films where it's got a huge cast.
Yeah, I don't remember her at all from that movie. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. I watched Night and Fog with her. That was really good. So disturbing to watch because you know she's dead at the end of the movie. It's based on a domestic abuse kind of incident where a husband, he stabbed his wife and killed their two children as well. That's Simon Yam's character.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's a good movie, a disturbing movie, sure, but yeah, she's so good in that. And she did, you know, she's beautiful, but she's not too beautiful for that film.
Mm.
And he's really, you know, Simon Yam is still very, he's Simon Yam.
Beautiful.
He's very beautiful, but he's not as shiny You know what I mean? And he's very,
right.
And unshaven and very loud-mouthed, and he can be scary. And it's
right.
So it's a tough movie to watch. It's the opposite of The Way We Are, the An Hui movie, which was very pleasant. But it's set in the same part of Hong Kong. It's a different side to that area. That area is known for a lot of violence and social problems. But The Way We Are showcased, you know, the good side. And Night and Fog showcased, unfortunately, the bad sides.
Right.
She might win a lot of stuff this year as well for that movie. It might be An Hui's second year in a row winning the awards. Hey, dude, I saw you had like a 75th follower on Twitter, so check if that's an actual follower. Because you sort of promised on the last show something for the 75th follower of our Twitter account. But you know, that I'm saying that, check if it's real, because you get these like
spam accounts
and like chicks are like, hey, look at my pictures. I'm a woman. Look at my pictures. They're great. You know, you get those kind of followers. I do anyway. Mm-hmm. Check who it is. And you promised them big bucks. And we're going to pay that quote right now. You can get money from me. Twitter.
Yep. Okay, this is probably going to be a deleted part, but still, our 75th follower is under the title of Hot Flesh.
Yeah. That's me.
Paul from Buffalo, New York. His biography describes him as crazy, sarcastic gay guy who formerly lived in San Francisco, New York City, and has an adventurous spirit who doesn't see limitations in life and is always up for a good time, plus 18s only.
You're going to have to send him in the
76 follower. Hello.